happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. And if you want to watch the program, you can do that by, well, one day later, you can download it on YouTube as well as on Facebook. Today, we're going to start off with the latest on health and healing, including brand new scientific information. This is the first place you're going to hear about it. They've been able to find RNA within plants that really benefit our own RNA. In other words, every time you take in a microRNA from plants, you are healing the body. Really revolutionary. And that's very exciting. I'll share that with you. Also, most people get their protein in America, over 95%, from animal sources. I'm going to share two things today. One is why you don't need anything from an animal ever. I'm talking about never having to consume, as a choice, anything that has a heartbeat or a face. What's the science behind that? And then a special commentary from Barbara King from Eon, The Pig on Your Plate. That pig was smart, sensitive, and how can we justify killing them for food? So that'll be our commentary on nutrition today. I'm also going to show you how even something as simple as peas, green peas, have a high degree of protein in them. Now, they don't sound exotic or exciting, but they're right up there with the best of the plant-based proteins and inexpensive. So I'll give that insight to you as well. And like it or not, broccoli is good for you. And broccoli is really healing and preventing cancer. The latest information on broccoli from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and the green pea information from Wash State University and the microRNA from GreenMed and a lot more on health and healing. Then today, I'm setting aside the second half of our program for a guest and commentaries. You're going to hear from Ron Paul today. You're going to also hear from John Oliver, and you're going to hear from the Deputy Attorney General, the person that oversees the FBI director and the FBI. And it's called asset forfeiture. And we're going to discuss, and you're going to have a chance to give us your input in our talkback segment about policing for profit. Could you imagine that in one recent year, the police in the United States stole more money than all of organized crime and all burglaries combined? That's just in one year, and it's getting worse. Now, if it hasn't happened to you, you might think, well, who cares? But what if you could be a victim? You better know what's going on here about our rights. If you haven't caught up to this, I'm a person that believes in the Constitution of the United States and our Bill of Rights. I'm a person that believes in the sovereignty of the individual and the sanctity of all human life. I'm a person that embraces the idea of peace and love and spiritual values. I'm a person that tells the truth, whether we can accept it or not, and let it be. But without that information, think what would be different in our lives. So we begin our journey. Also, I played yesterday a young woman in a singing contest. She was 9 years old, who sang beautiful opera and surprised everyone. I found another one. This one was singing I think she's 9 or 10, in front of a group of judges who've never heard her before. And I've edited out, because it was in Dutch, the conversation before, and just let you hear her voice. So I thought in our first break you would appreciate that. Just remember, that's a little 9-year-old who's able to create such beauty. Let's begin. Where I grew up, I don't believe anyone ever ate anything healthy in their entire lives, unless it was my mom and her aunts and my uncles during the Great Depression, when they were growing up also. They were born in the 1920s, but they lived that hard life. And I know that my mother and her sisters all ate healthy because they all lived during the Great Depression on my great aunt's farm. And she was one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. She was wiry. She was strong. I remember when she was in her 80s, or might be even 90s, I was young, and it was in Little Hocking, Ohio, and she was shaking apples out of a tree. She was up in the tree, and I was supposed to catch the apples, you know, pick them up off the ground. And she ran that farm her whole life. Well, during the Depression, that's where a lot of people lived, not just my mother's family, but also strangers. And, of course, everything was organic, and it was one of these unique model farms where they had at least 50 different types of fruit trees. And in the fruit, they would find a fruit cellar. They had a root cellar. You walk down this, let's say, steps for about 8 feet, and then you're at about 55 degrees. It's just one of those wonderful things. We don't have many more. We should. Root cellars keep the temperature, no matter how hot or cold it is upstairs, even. That's where you store your root vegetables, like sweet potatoes and yams and apples, etc. Pears, they last a long time. But then she also told them how to dry it, cutting it and putting it on screens and letting with little cloth over it so it didn't get eaten by the birds or insects. And then they had barrels, huge 55-gallon drum barrels, all lined with bee propolis to prevent bacterial infection. And that's, by the way, the same for a beehive. That bee propolis, which is kind of a black, sticky, you get it on your fingers, it's you have to really wash it off. But that is one of nature's most perfect natural antibiotics. And that's what the bees use to keep their hive clean. But in folk medicine, taking a quarter teaspoon of this wonderful natural antibiotic, bee propolis, with some honey, and stirring that into apple cider vinegar, a tablespoon, was one of the best remedies in the world for everything. Colds, flu, sore throat, upset stomach. It helps with everything. And by the way, still does. Something that is that old and that important should not be forgotten today. And so vegetables galore, herbs by over 100 different herbs, culinary herbs and medicinal herbs, because back then you couldn't afford a doctor, maybe you wasn't one nearby, so you had to have enough knowledge of just basic health that you could go into a barn, and there'd be little brown bags, and the bag would have dried herbs with the letter, the name of the herb written on it and the date. And that way you could have tinctures or dried, put them in teas or food. And that's what she did. And she was a vegan. And they made their own breads. Everything was self-sufficient. And so therefore they ate healthy. Now, there was a time when Americans ate that way. A lot of Americans did, when it was more rural American. Not that they were all vegan, they weren't. But for those that were poor, you didn't want to sacrifice your cow because it did the plowing and it gave you milk. But Americans, as long as they did not succumb to, let's say, non-pasteurized milk that could contain different bacteria that could hurt a person or some of the infectious disease, they lived pretty good lives. Now, we jump ahead. And today, most people don't eat healthy. I wish they did, but that's conditioning, propaganda, advertising. And as I got a call last night from Berthold Reimers, called me around 11 o'clock. He said he was running in Central Park. He'd been working so hard he hadn't had a chance to exercise, so he went for a run. He plays soccer, likes to keep fit. And he said, Gary, he said, we got to do something. I said, what's that? He said, people are lazy. I said, some are, yes. A lot aren't. I said, now, are you talking about the ones who are lazy or the ones who are not? No, the ones who are. If you're lazy, the likelihood is you're not going to eat right. If you're not going to eat right, then you're going to get sick. You're going to get diabetes. You're going to be overweight. You're going to have high blood pressure, and you're going to die. And we don't want to see that. Work out a protocol for them. So today I'm working out a protocol, and hopefully we'll present it tomorrow. And where everyone in this audience who wants to get healthy can. But let's now go to the other side of that. Let's look at the tens of thousands of people in this audience who have been making healthy choices and who are healthier because of it, living longer lives, who have not come down. One day they wake up and they're 60, they're 70, they're 80 and think, am I missing something? Am I missing diabetes, high blood pressure, arthritis, memory loss, aging skin, falling out of hair, a muscle fatigue, impotent? I don't have any of that stuff. Yeah, and there's a reason why you don't. And it's not by accident. And it's not genes. This whole myth of genes. Genes can only really help you 4 years on either side, but they don't change the quality of your life. Just merely extend it a bit or shorten it a bit. But you can completely change that. So now imagine all the vegetables and fruits that you've been eating. And think of those of you who went one step further and have been juicing. And one step further and had concentrates or even the ultimate concentrated powders. In any measure that you've been consuming, you have been changing your DNA, even if you weren't aware of it. Now, yes, there's studies. There's over 1,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature about the what we'll call the Mediterranean diet. And by the way, in the 1960s and 70s, it was the Okinawa diet. And before that, it was the Crete diet, because the longest-lived people in the world by small population are in the island of Crete. And if you've ever been to Crete, you know they eat a lot of purslane, which we think is a weed, and we throw it away. Never. It's crispy. It's it hasn't like a, almost like a cucumber, except it's kind of flat, about the size of a nickel. And you eat the whole vine, little brown vine, and it's loaded with nutrition. But they also eat a lot of herbs in their food. If you've gone into any of the kitchens in the Mediterranean area, notice if they really enjoy cooking, which most do. And I can honestly say I never had a bad meal in Italy, France, or Spain. I never had a good meal in Ireland, Scotland, England, or Wales. Maybe that's just me. Other people, I'm sure, maybe things today have changed. I got to go back over there in the near future. And I'm just anticipating what the next meal I'll have when I go to Iceland next week. But there are places in the world where you just can't get a bad meal because food is so important and they really are masters of it. And so you'll go into a kitchen and you'll see dozens of herbs. Herbs beyond rosemary and thyme and dill and oregano that we have here, or the spices that you'll see in the Middle East or in the Far East, like cumin and turmeric and allspice. In any case, what's happening when you take these things? Now we have science that shows it's actually changing your DNA. It's reversing aging of your DNA. It's protecting your DNA. And as long as something is protecting it, reducing free radicals, stopping the cytokines from destroying your cells, turning off the inflammatory process, then allowing reparative, restorative material to your DNA, you're going to live a longer life. You're going to be healthier. That brings me to this, quote, new research is exploding into scientific journals detailing exciting ways in which foods interact with the expression of our genes. In fact, there's a whole new field of study known as nutrigenomics. Now, you probably have never heard of nutrigenomics, but it's all new. Researching the effects of foods and food constituents on gene expression. Recently, there's been a major development in nutrigenics. that opens the possibility that successfully preventing and treating many diseases may be as simple as administering vegetables and medicinal herbs to deliver specific factors known as microRNAs, ribonucleic acids. And the first step in transferring the genetic code of DNA occurs via a process called transcription. And during transcription, the double helix strand of DNA is split and then transcribed into a parallel single-stranded RNA molecule. And then it goes on to talk about how we never thought of the vegetables and fruits we have as being a part of this process. We thought of eat an orange, eat an apple, get some vitamin C. Eat a vegetable, get a little chlorophyll. No. There are hundreds of phytonutrients per vegetable and fruit. So every time you take these in, you are now transferring that code, that transcription, into your own DNA process. You become what you eat. Now, that's the good news. So the more vegetables and fruits that you eat, the more benefit to your DNA and the younger you stay. Then I'll add in exercise and you lengthen your telomeres. And remember, the telomeres are the end caps of chromosomes. And when we're eating the wrong food, pizzas, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, steaks, you're speeding it up. Alcohol speeds it up. Cooking at high heat speeds it up. French fries speed it up. So the faster that your DNA is changing, the shorter your lifespan. Because you only have so many cell divisions in your whole life. So imagine this. Imagine that you're in a movie theater and you're watching a good film. The film's about you. You're the film. It's your life. And you're looking at yourself at different stages of your life, and suddenly this starts to go a little faster. And then in about 30 seconds, you're going very fast, like you put the film in fast forward. And at the side is a clock showing you how much time until the film is over and your life's over. Wouldn't reason and common sense say, whoa, let's slow this down? Yeah. So when you exercise on a regular basis, you're slowing down the cell division. When you juice and you eat properly, you're slowing down the cell division. When you de-stress, you're slowing down the cell division. When you take the right supplements, you slow down the cell division. You actually lengthen the time of division, hence lengthening telomeres. What's nice is for those of you who've been coming to retreats and workshops, health support groups, or just individual counseling over the last 45 years, think of all the diseases that you have not or will not suffer from. Think of the extra quality years of life you have or have had because you've made simple choices. Now the science is actually catching up to what you've done. So that's just good news all the way around. Of course, the other side of that is, if you do just the opposite, then, as Bertold says, people are lazy. Some are, and they will die sooner. They'll suffer from diseases, and their life will be substantially limited versus the quality of life that they deserve and should enjoy. So, just something to think about. From Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, a new study, and it says the following. Like it or not, broccoli is good. Turns out our mothers may have been on to something when they told us to eat our vegetables, especially our broccoli. A compound found naturally in broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables may reduce some of the harmful effects of type 2 diabetes in overweight adults. Well, that's 30 million adults right there. And then add in another 70 million adults who suffer from pre-diabetes, but they're going to end up with diabetes and the same neuropathy, the same heart disease. An article in the journal Science Translational Medicine shows that they found that the broccoli has extreme healing capacity. And they did all these studies and 2 years of work on this. Quote, the broccoli demonstrated the compound's effectiveness in boosting the body's ability to resist cancer. And they said having broccoli 3 to 4 days a week, 50 to 100 grams, that's a small amount. 50 to 100 grams, well, that's only like 3 ounces. So have yourself 3 ounces of broccoli. That's only about 2 little crowns. That's not much. And then they found over 100 scientific papers that support this. So for those who want to help prevent cancer, they have found different sulfur-bearing nutrients that are not only anti-diabetic, but also anti-cancer in the broccoli. That's good. So that's what we want. And finally, green peas. I mentioned at the beginning of the program. This is from Washington State University, and here's what it says. There is low awareness of the beneficial effects of green pea in many countries, despite growing evidence of clear health effects. And the new research published in Nutrients suggests that eating green peas could block several damaging effects of a high-fat diet. So what they're saying here is this. If you're the average person, you're having way too much fat in a diet. Also, you're having a type of fat called arachidonic acid that comes from having a meat-based diet, chicken, meat, pork, etc. And that's not good for you. So by having peas, that will help mitigate that. And if you want to start by having it in a simple way, just take some fresh peas or organic frozen. And then when you make some brown rice, just stir it in. It's that simple. And we're going to wrap up our health segment today with a little commentary. This is from Eon Magazine from Barbara King. I'll quote her because it's a good piece. Domestic pigs, the kind portrayed in hot pink neon above barbecue joints, curly tails, and carefree, have prodigious memories. In problem solving with computers, they match wits with little kids and win. They are able to plan ahead, and they live in complex social communities. They recognize other pigs as distinct individuals. Pigs just aren't cerebral, though. They have heart. When others are in distress, they can express concern and act with empathy. A description of pig behaviors derived from scientific experiments and compiled by a group of scientists is so impressive, you might think it was about chimpanzees or elephants or whales. We eat pigs, though, and we eat them on a scale unparalleled in comparison with the rate at which we consume other brainy mammals. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, pork is the most consumed meat in the world. Of course, storytelling about pigs as individuals invites people to think differently about pork and bacon. But what does science, the kind of science revived and reviewed now about animals, what does it say? And it says this, that pigs are very empathetic and intelligent. And it goes into some of the research they've done in a major paper called The Way Humans Behave Modulates the Emotional State of Piglets. And it says, the conclusions reached that gently handled pigs showed more positive emotional states than roughly handled or neglected ones. Conveys a larger message that we have a way to go before it's the starting point, not the big reveal that farmed animals have emotions and are affected by how we treat them. A good deal of the science writing on pigs aims to increase awareness of pigs' capacities so that they are treated better. Then it talks about how a Cambridge University professor, Donald Broom, and others discovered that pigs with only 5 hours of experience can use a mirror to find the location of a hidden object, and they were faster at it than kids and all say they beat kids on cognition. Their cognition is formable. Quote, the biologist Candace Cromie at Purdue University in Indiana described the cognitive research she had done on pigs, and she said that at the beginning she thought the pigs were just kind of dumb and dirty animals, but she found out that they were just the opposite. Her careful research proved her low expectations wrong. In an ingenious experiment, she and her colleagues carried wooden blocks shaped with X and O's around the pigs. Only the O's carried food for the pigs. The pigs soon followed the O and not the X carriers. Now, next, the researchers, no longer carrying wooden blocks, wrote T-shirts marked with either X or O's, and the pigs transferred their knowledge to a new situation. They approached only the O's wearing that, and they got the meaning of the symbol flattened to two dimensions from three. She also tested pigs along with young human children on a computer exercise. The goal was to move a joystick to a target by snout for the porcine study participants, by hand for the small human ones. The pigs were better at it than the toddlers. And what a mental and emotional fears would pigs need to pull people off consuming them? Then it goes on to talk about, the rest of the article talks about how in every measure, pigs showed extreme understanding. Now, from my own perspective, since I am an animal rescuer and have been my entire adult life, and I've rescued over 3,000 animals, meaning people bring me hurt, diseased animals, animals that they didn't have the heart to euthanize, and so they dropped them off. You know, I walk out one day and there's a box saying, this is an old dog, and you know, I don't have the heart to see him die at the vets, so I brought him here. Well, I've never euthanized an animal, ever, though I was told I had to, starting with, it was 26 horses that we found at a farm that were so out of condition, they were on the ground, they couldn't get up. They were just skin. And the vet, Dr. Moore, says, we got to put them down. I said, no. He said, you can't help these creatures. They can't even stand. I said, you can't help them, but I have never euthanized. I'm not going to. So I went about getting these large, giant syringes and filling with my special, you know, compounds that I put together for the animals. And just all day, every day, you know, squeezing them down their throats, massaging their bodies, putting healing energy in, spending time with them, playing them music. And we didn't have a single death. They all got up in time. They all got their weight back, took about a year, and they were so healthy that they were healthier than they had been in their life. And then we found them a 3,000-acre sanctuary in Canada and shipped them up to Canada. And even with these dogs, even with old. By the way, you want to see something that's unique? For those of you who, you know, don't think that you can make a difference in an animal's life, I'm posting today, as far as I can see anywhere, the oldest living ring-tailed lemur in the world, ever. She's 31, and some of you will remember her because she was a rescue, her and her siblings, from an abusive family down in Texas. And back in 1989, she was down there, and I was recovering them all. And she was the one that she would come over when kids from a local school would come by, handicapped kids who wanted to be around the animals. And I'd bring her and the others over, and they would play with the animals on their, you know, make them a little lunch and let these wonderful girls. She's still alive. She's still alive, healthy as can be. And she's out all day. And all the other animals respect her. Oh, they all go up to her, and like they know that she's the wise, great woman, and they never harass her, never challenge her in any way. And then in the evening, she finds a comfortable place to go in, and we make sure she's secure. That's the only time that she's in a secured environment, because I don't want any bobcat eating her. But in the daytime, she's out all day. And she has a special diet. In fact, I've just changed the diet yesterday to put more anti-aging nutrients in. She's 31 years old. 31. Now, go up and Google ring-tailed lemurs and see how long they normally live. And completely healthy. So the idea that we have to say, oh, the dog, the vet said, I got to put the dog down. They got to put the cat down. They're old. Yeah, they're right. And then I say, you don't have to. There's a lot you can do to reverse cancers and arthritis and pain in dogs and cats, horses. You can. More on that in an upcoming program. Now, so here's a little pig, and it was dropped off. And it was, mind you, a lot of people say it's a miniature pot belly. 99% are not miniatures. They'll grow up to be, 400 pounds, 300 pounds. They eat a lot, but when they're small, they're very small. You could put them in the palm of your hand. And you talk about smart. They're smarter than dogs and cats. They're very loyal, and they're always curious. And if you go jogging, like I go jogging, that little thing would be jogging right beside me. And then I go in, jump in the pool, do laps. She jumps in the pool and does laps. And then it's time for rest. She rests. And her favorite place to rest was she would find beautiful, my long-haired Dachshund miniature, and she'd go and curl right up in her belly. That's where she loved to sleep. Smart as can be. So the next time you think about eating pork, just realize that's a very sentient, sensitive, spiritual energy that you don't need to eat. We don't need animal proteins. It's out of print, but if you can get one up on Amazon, get a copy of The Egg Project. I think it went into 17 printings. It was based upon the work I did at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow in anti-aging medicine and nutritional science. And I did a study showing that all vegetables and grains, nuts and seeds and legumes have all 8 essential amino acids. Therefore, there is no reason we need to eat any animal because we're getting the 8 essential amino acids from these other vegan-based foods, plant-based foods. Not only that, but we're also getting fiber that meat doesn't give you. We're giving a full spectrum of phytonutrients that the meat doesn't give you. We are protecting the environment. There's no methane released. It takes 60 gallons of water to grow a potato. It takes 3,200 gallons of water for the amount of what you get in the meat of a hamburger. A hamburger, 3,200 gallons. And we're growing 60 billion animals in the world each year for human consumption. Such a waste. And if there's one thing we can all do to help do our part for global warming is go vegan. Eat local. Eat organic. Support farmers, organic farmers. Go against GMOs. Challenge them. And you're going to be healthier. All the science is on that side of the equation, all of it. And I have hundreds of thousands of studies in our archives, some peer-reviewed literature, supporting it. Meat, they have nothing on their side. Oh, they do. Lots of studies showing increased breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer, heart attack, stroke, inflammation. Yeah, that's what they've got. So there's no reason, no legitimate reason, to ever again have to consume anything with the heartbeat or a face. And by the way, that includes fish. Now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear for the remainder of our program all about police becoming bigger thieves than organized crime in its entirety and all burglars combined in the United States. But they're legally allowed to steal. But here now is a young little girl singing her heart out, and listen to her voice.
Oh, house. You.
Absolutely spectacular. Now let's go down to Charlottesville, Virginia, and meet our guest, John Whitehead. John is a civil attorney and an author. He has dedicated his entire adult life based upon constitutional law. He's a constitutional scholar and human rights, civil rights. He looks after those who are persecuted and the oppressed. He is also the founder in 1982 of the Rutherford Institute, a nonprofit civil liberties and human rights organization in Charlottesville, Virginia. And he is the author of Battlefield America, The War on the American People, which outlines the course of America has taken to become a militarized police state. His website is rutherford.org. Nice to have you with us today, John.
Hey, thanks for being on, Gary.
I want to, before we go to you to deal with this for main of the show, I want to play you what got my interest in this, and that is the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, Rosenstein, who oversees the FBI. He is the he's the only person who has the authority to, you know, to intervene with the director. The director is accountable to him. And he was supporting as a civil forfeiture and mandatory minimums. And I'm only going to play you a short piece of this to give you an idea. This was on Fox with Greta Carlson last week, and I was watching it, and it so shocked me that the top policeman would, in effect, open the gates to all the different policing agencies and the FBI and anyone else that carries a badge or a gun and has the authority to pull someone over, is you can now take someone's assets. Yet he tried to worm himself around this. He tried to sugarcoat it. Listen to what he has to say. Yeah, we're just getting this loaded right now. We'll have it for you in just a second.
To the story, for the first time since he took office, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is answering questions about the Comey firing, the Russia investigation, and special counsel Robert Mueller. Our conversation begins, though, with another hot issue, Attorney General Jeff Sessions reinstating get tough policies on drugs and the people who traffic them. It's a whole new era at justice.
Civil asset forfeiture is a key tool that helps law enforcement defund organized crime, takes back ill-gotten gains from them, and prevent new crimes from being committed.
So the policy, though, is not without controversy, which is exactly where we would begin with Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein. Watch. Deputy Attorney, thank you very much for being with us. I want to jump right in on the issue of civil forfeiture, which I know you're discussing. John Oliver recently sort of brought this issue on television, talking about a man who was pulled over and had $2,400 confiscated from him by the police. And I think for a lot of people, it's surprising to hear that this is a practice that happens often and that the police don't really need anything more than a good hunch that it might be drug money to take that money away and not give it back.
Yeah, that's actually a misrepresentation. Okay. A hunch is not enough. In order to seize property, police need probable cause. It's the same standard that police need to make an arrest. And when a decision is made to forfeit property federally, we conduct an independent review of the facts and circumstances. So we actually have a government lawyer, a federal government lawyer, review those facts and make a determination of whether or not that seizure was supported by probable cause.
What about when police just pull someone over and decide to seize a wallet, money, in that situation? Is that all right?
Well, keep in mind that the federal government doesn't regulate all police conduct. What we're talking about here are cases where a decision is made that a federal forfeiture is appropriate. And so that issue only comes up when the police present this matter to a federal government agency and request their assistance in conducting a forfeiture. And if they want the federal government to forfeit that property, then we need to make our own determination about whether or not that seizure was supported by probable cause.
But an inspector general did an assessment of the Department of Justice and said that $28 billion had come into the coffers through those means, and that in some cases there was not any litigation, any charging that was related to those forfeitures.
I think that $28 billion is an accumulation of a lot of different forfeitures over an extended period.
Okay, now that's pretty much where he rests his case, but here's where he's disingenuous.
It's not much of a case, by the way, but go ahead.
here's where he is trying to mislead us. He tried to bring it back as if this was a federal issue. It's not. Any police in America can do this, and it doesn't get to the federal level. And they're getting away with this. Take a step by step now, John, through what's actually happening, how often it happens. I saw 68,000 people had assets stolen from them, including people who were simply on a highway that someone had a drug arrest, and now said because one person had a drug arrest on a major interstate highway, it was now open game. We could arrest anyone who was on here for nothing more than saying, well, you might have had drugs, or we think you were in the process of going someplace to get drugs, no matter what explanation a person has, no matter what their background is. And then once that asset is seized, now you have to go to court to get it back, and that means you may spend more in litigation to get back than what you had taken, so people just walk away from it, and this shouldn't be the case. Take us through this step by step, please.
Well, first of all, go to Rutherford.org, your listeners, and read my article that came out yesterday called Policing for Profit, Jeff Sessions and Company's Thinly Veiled Plot to Rob Us Blind. In other words, that guy you just, I don't know who, I followed him. Listen, he's not telling you the truth. He's either completely deluded or a liar. But the point is that these so-called civil asset forfeiture issues, which I detail in my comment, I go through a number of the cases that have happened, all they do is pull you over for possibly speeding or texting while driving or whatever. And if they see a box or something and ask you what that is, and you say, well, that's some money I'm taking here or there, they're seizing it automatically. The statistics say it all. I mean, in 2014, police took more stuff from people than burglars did. In that year alone, the Treasury and Justice Departments, U.S. Treasury and Justice Department, deposited more than $5 billion in their respective asset forfeiture funds. That same year, the FBI reports that burglaries losses topped only $3.5 billion. So in other words, the federal government, along with the police, is taking more money from American citizens than burglars. And it's a lucrative scheme. I mean, the cases that I list in my article, just give you one. A year ago, police stole $201,000 in cash from a lady named Lisa Leonard because the money, which she had planned to use to buy a house for her son, was being transported on a highway, supposedly used by drug traffickers. They took it all. She lost. They went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court actually upheld the theft. So the courts, like I say, most judges I run into today, and I'm going to be blunt here because I've been in and out of the courts for over 40 years, most judges today I run into are just bureaucrats with robes on. They're backing everything the police do. But these are just, you know, the cases out there are amazingly shocking. And when you go to look at what the cops are spending the money on, it's, you know, it's just nuts. Clowns for carnivals, pizza parties, things like that. You go to your local police department and look up their asset forfeiture website or whatever, their funds. You'll see they have a lot of funds in there. And what are they using them for? And so what I'm saying is here, Jeff Sessions, his people working under him, they're just tools for the police unions, which have obviously have a tremendous influence over the Trump administration. And
I want to go
it's only going to get worse.
I want to go a little further because I don't want people to think this is just a nuisance situation happening occasionally. There are states in the United States like North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi. It is routine there to get stopped. You don't have to be speeding. You don't have to have any. And not only that, but if it's this, they can confiscate your car. And there are cases where your house, they can, a business they can confiscate. They took a woman.
And you said it earlier. The key here is that the average citizen does not have the money to get it back. So in 80% of the cases, when their money is taken again from them in this country with all that billions of dollars, 80% of those cases, there's no charge levied against the property owner in the end. They're found not guilty. But to get the money back, you got to go to court. The question is, what kind of country do we live in that allows such bullcrap? It's a country where there's no fairness and no justice. And I'm telling people, if you don't wake up, folks, it's only going to get worse. I mean, it's just, I list the cases in my commentary. They are so numerous. They're so ridiculous. There's one town in Texas that actually, has a free printed up forms for the policemen, listen to this, in their cars, ready to pull people over and take their money. So what do I tell people? Don't be carrying large amounts of cash in your car, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, the TSA now, through the Drug Enforcement Agency, is doing the same thing in airports. If you've got cash in your luggage or whatever, a large amount of cash, watch out.
They're going to steal it.
They're going to grab it. And it's all for some reason, they're not fighting drugs. I mean, there's no evidence of that. They're stealing from the people.
But, John, look at what they've done. Look how very clever. This is something Joseph Goebbels or Edward Bernays would have done. They put it as if we arrested this drug lord and we confiscated his plane and his house in Miami and $2 million in cash. So that's how they bait the story. But go to Oklahoma. I won't even lecture in Oklahoma. I'm so disappointed in that state and its politicians' public. Why? Because massive hydrofracking, the environment's a total cesspool, the air is polluted, same way in Wyoming, same way in Montana, all to make a profit. But now the police in Oklahoma, which in my opinion are doing more of this asset forfeiture at a level that we've never seen, they got a little machine. They'll ask for your credit cards. They'll take cards.
They're taking it right off your credit card.
And they take everything you've got in your bank. It's theirs now.
It's theirs.
And yet they won't give you a ticket. They won't cite you as having committed a crime. You're just told, go on your way. They hand you back your wallet. You have no money left in any of your accounts. And you think, hold on, you can't just take all the money that's in my, you can't download my debit account. You can't.
Yeah,
and well, I had $100,000 in my debit account. I only use it. It's too bad because
if Sessions gets his way, that system's going.
But in Oklahoma, you just better be aware that they can unload every single penny you have if it's on any card. And
they just swipe your card and they got it. Yeah,
and there was a restaurant where a woman was banking, and she has a restaurant, and restaurants deal in cash. And this was a small town, and she'd been there forever. And one day, they take her restaurant because they said, well, how do we know that the cash that you have wasn't being laundered by a drug cartel? She said, it's a couple $100 a day.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. They took her restaurant
and they sold it. Here's the other thing people have to worry about when you're traveling. The police now on their, they have all kinds of electronic gadgets in their cars. They're getting reports on you. They know basically, in many instances, they know what you deal in, what you're thinking. I mean, with their Stingray devices, they're downloading your cell phone calls. They have them in their car with the dirt boxes that are flying over towns now. They're downloading all the information on your cell phone. That's being put in an algorithm. And I warn people because the Department of Homeland Security announced they're doing threat assessments on every home in America, ranging from green to red. And that information is available to local police. And you wonder why some policemen, they come to the door sometimes and knock on your door for a knock and talk, they call it now. And by the way, we've got a paper on it. People should go read it on our website. They're a little agitated. That's because you may have done something, have money, or been accused of something that you don't even know about, that they think you've done. And they have that when you're traveling along the highway, and they're looking for a reason, by the way. And with license plate readers now on most police cars across the country, they're calculating where you move, what you do. and they have this information, and when they approach you, they're ready, and they're asking.
John,
so what I'm saying, you know your rights is number one. A lot of Americans just either blurt out something or something. Learn your rights and how to deal with the cops that are pulling you over.
John, it goes even a little further. They also now, based upon tapping into your system, your electronic system, they can do that through smart meters, but they also can read everything going on in your house. They can turn all your computers on, your televisions on, all monitoring you.
And your television reports everything,
Everything that you watch, everything you download.
Again, we've written all this on my website.
People are unaware how close to 1984. We're in 1984.
We're in 1984. I'm telling people, listen, by the time you're debating something, the great philosopher Marshall McLuhan back in the city said, I mean, in the 60s said, when you're debating a subject in society, are we in the future or whatever, you're there. So we're already there, folks. They've got, I mean, the technology they have, the NSA, they're downloading 2 billion emails daily, and now, did you know this? They're traffic shaping, what they call it. They're sending the emails to Great Britain now, so they don't have to adhere to the Fourth Amendment.
They also
Most people don't know that.
They have vans going up and down the streets that are watching you in real time in your house. If you're having sex, they're watching it, recording it. If you're having an argument, they know what it's about. If you're watching something on television, they know this. Plus, they go into your banking system, so now they know who you are.
And every time you click on something on Facebook, they know exactly what you're reading, what you're thinking. And so does Google.
John, who gave them the permission to do this? Who gave the government?
No one.
And yet they've taken this, the conservative community, the American public have believed in either Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal, and my God, is that a limited way of looking at life? Because the perpetrators, the deep state that's behind these people, they're the ones who benefit, because as long as we fear the government, we fear government agents, we feel we have no control, we cannot talk back, we cannot protest, because every protest now in the United States is infiltrated with the government agency. We know that from WikiLeaks. We know that absolutely the FBI and these other agencies infiltrate government protests or corporate protests. So if you are a protester, if they consider you now a domestic terrorist, they know that before they pull you over. So
I had an NSA agent visit me about a year ago, been many years. He talked to me in my office. He had read my books. He liked me and said, you do good work, and I'm really worried about the future of our government. Before he walked out of my office, he stopped at my doorway and looked back at me. You know what he said to me? John, you're infiltrated. And I went, what does that mean? He said, he just shrugged his shoulders and walked off. So the infiltration thing is absolutely correct, yes.
Well, I've seen that actually happen in real life. So I'm saying that all Americans now who care about freedom should be aware that we are living in this dystopian state, but being convinced that we live in a utopian virtual reality state. So they're giving us what people say they want, and yet taking away what is most vital. And people have forgotten about the importance of the Constitution, forgotten about the Bill of Rights, forgotten about basic freedoms. And that's why your article, which I'm going to read tomorrow, by the way, on the show, Policing for Profit, Jeff Sessions and the Thinly Veiled Plot to Rob Us Blind, John Whitehead. John, thank you for the good work you're doing and the work down there at the Rutherford Institute.
What I want to say to people is educate yourself. I meet law students today that don't even know what's in the First Amendment. They're not teaching it anymore. So teach your kids at home the Bill of Rights, okay, folks?
Thank you, John. John Whitehead there on Policing for Profit and the thing on Fox. I just wish the people at Fox would do their homework, or MSNBC. Do your homework. Know the truth of a story before you invite someone on who then just is using your form, even if you're well-intentioned, as a propagandist. And that's what they're doing. Here, we challenge them. I want to thank you all for listening. And I want to thank the people who send these video clips and photographs from around the world. And one we just got, I thought I'd put it up there. It's from one of our dance parties. I don't know the year. I remember the music, and this we're going to go out with. If you're watching this, and you'll be watching this tomorrow, this is from one of the listeners who was there and took this little video of one of our dance parties, which I'm going to do another one in the next month or two, and I'll let you know so you can all come.